great, right? Very sharp. Now we've talked about Rosie's airplane, and you've pretty much you got a little part of his life there. Chuck, would you tell us about Lopez's airplane and tell a little bit about his history and development to fly the airplanes all up through the third? Thank you.
Well, Donald Lopez was in the CBI earlier than Rosie was. He arrived in the summer of 44, and Donald Lopez was towards the end of his tour by then. And we've already talked about his last mission that he shared, or that they accompanied each other on. He rotated home right after that November 11th, 1944 mission, or shortly thereafter. That's one of the reasons you'll see on Lope's Hope, if you look carefully, there's three victory markings, but he had five total. They weren't all in Lope's Hope, and the last one was, but they gave the airplane to the next guy after he rotated home, and he didn't paint on the new ones. And so in the contemporary pictures that we have, you can see that it has three victory markings on it, and that's the way we restored it. He went on to be a test pilot with the early jets. He did some amazing things. He worked on the space program, became deputy director of the Air and Space Museum, and if you've been there, beyond some of the other things we already talked about, like the Pioneers of Flight display and those early displays that show the Wright brothers' plane and stuff, that's all his creation. So, and of anybody I've ever researched, nobody has a negative word for Don Lopez. Right. So, but yeah. As far as John Rosenbaum, he had a very honorable, very long and honorable Air Force career. Quite frequently, we honor the aces. He wasn't an ace, but the sacrifices of all the men that were there were the same, and it's important that we recognize everybody. And he went on to do stayed in the Air Force and or Army Air Force and then Air Force for 31 years. I can go into all the units and stuff, but I don't think I really need to after Lavinia's great video there. I want to correct one thing. It wasn't Lavinia's daughter that was involved with Cheers. It was the videographer who was a family member. And honestly, I wish I knew his name, but I don't. But it was really generous of them to do that interview for us, I thought it was amazing. Anyway, he served in Korea, not in the war, but he served in an F-86 squadron, commanded one to enforce the treaty after the war, like in 54. And in Vietnam, as has already been stated. Another notable part of his career was he was in Vietnam and he was about to rotate out, and he was actually on the airliner to fly home when the Pueblo incident happened. And if you remember that, North Korea captured a U.S. Navy vessel and held the crew hostage. I don't remember the numbers, but it was like 100 people. And he was the only one in Vietnam that they felt had the experience to handle that delicate situation. They actually pulled him right off the airliner and put him in charge of that. So, and 31 years, he did many other remarkable accomplishments. He trained, he was a flight instructor and trained quite a few people from different countries. And he became familiar with the F-104 fairly early in his career. And so he would go to other countries quite often and train them and check them out in the F-104, which was definitely a challenging fighter to fly. So.
Well, thank you. That's you pretty much covered his life there, really. We appreciate that. Talking about the P-51, generic P-51, tell us about the development of it.
Well,
and the reason it was
developed. I'm the wrong guy to talk about history in front of a whole group of
people. Well, you did a great job 2 days ago.
You know, I think most of you know the urgency of the P-51 design and stuff, and I think I'll probably botch something here when I start talking about it. But as I understand it, the British government came to North American and wanted North American to build P-40s for them, basically. Nod your head or shake your head. Come on, Eric, help me out. And North American basically said, hey, we can build you a better airplane and we can do it quick. And they sketched something out on a napkin and said, this is what we're talking about doing and this is the goal of the mission and everything. And they went to work, and in like 120 days, they flew an airplane. They not only designed it, but they flew the prototype. And when while they were doing that, they had such confidence in what they were doing that they were already gearing up to manufacture the airplane. They weren't really one-off building an airplane, so they were able to put it into production. The A model Mustang, which came out with the Allison engine, was built to those specs. And the airplane went into service fairly rapidly in World War II. But as the mission changed, it went from being an air-to-ground airplane. They were looking more for a long-distance, high-altitude escort airplane, and the British already had the Rolls-Royce Merlin engine in the Spitfire, so they adapted that engine to the A model Mustang, and that became the B and C model Mustang, which were basically the same airplanes built at different factories. And as the airplane advanced, it became, you know, a two-stage, two-speed supercharger on the back of the Merlin V-12, and gave it high altitude and long range capabilities because of North American's new laminar flow wing and the things that made the airplane more efficient. And obviously, it goes on to be said that the airplane was the first Allied escort fighter to be able to go from England all the way into the heartland of Germany to Berlin and protect the bombers all the way in. And there's a quote out there of Hermann Göring saying, when he saw Mustangs over Berlin, he said, "We've lost the war." And so that was the significance of the Mustang, I think, is that, you know, it was an airplane that was developed extremely quickly and successfully and morphed into many different missions throughout the war and was very successful at them, to the point that in the CBI and in the Pacific, the airplane also became an escort for the long-range bombers going to Japan out of Tinian and places like that. So, it's a tremendous airplane to fly. It's a very... When you fly some of the early airplanes from the war, at the beginning of the war, I'm kind of partial to old airplanes and vintage airplanes. So I'm partial to the Wildcat and the P-40 and the Hurricane, because I always joke that those were the three airplanes that carried the torch while all these pretty girls were getting built.
Yeah. You know?
And they came along. And they're great airplanes, and they really are, but there's such a dramatic change. It advanced so fast, and it went... From being, you fly the Wildcat and it's 29 cranks while you're coming out to get the gear up, and I'm not quite tough enough to get it right over the hump, so I got to stop for a second and push it over one more time, and the airplane's going like this while I'm flying it and stuff. And the P-40, everything's kind of manual, and it, you put the cowl flaps up and down, and there's a big cultivator shank handle over here that you pull back and forth like that. So and you get in this thing, and everything's laid out nice, and it's the buttons are in the right place, and stuff does things automatically. So it's, the Mustang was just a... was kind of a quantum leap in fighters in World War II.
Well, you mentioned earlier the A and the B. Explain the difference between the A, B, C, and D and the later models.
So the A was the Allison-powered airplane, and they built various versions of it for different missions, air-to-ground and things.
The B it looks similar to that. It looked,
they
it,
do. The A model Mustang prop. With the Allison has an air intake scoop on the top, more like a P-40, and the bottom cowl is different. The early airplanes had guns in the nose in a different gun arrangement, in a smaller scoop on the bottom, and they were pretty fast and hard to see out of, like these, the canopy arrangement. The B and C are basically the same airplanes built at different factories. The D is the classic Mustang that we all think of, with the bubble canopy and the great visibility and a better gun arrangement and a little bit different wing. The K was that airplane with a different propeller on it. The H was a much later airplane that they built kind of as an interceptor. It was a lighter airplane. It had a lot of different design features in it and the gear and stuff, trying to get it to climb better, as I understand it. So that's...
a lot of people, and myself included, over the years, when you spoke of the Mustang, I thought of the 8th Air Force and the Escort. I just said that... I didn't pay much attention to how many were in the Pacific. What percentage of the airplanes were in the Pacific? Not percentage, but Do you have any idea where we're...
Well, I don't know. Boy, if there's anybody out
there...
There
were a lot of
them over there. Oh, man, when you see the pictures of the B-29 bases and then the Mustang bases that were associated with them, there's thousands of them over there and stuff. You know, the first airplane was what, the A-36 Apache? Is that the first A model? Eric? Yeah? I don't know. They had the different versions in there, but by the time they got, through all of the British versions, I'd say, and got into this thing, then they started putting, at the end of the war, they started putting Mustangs over there because of the long-range requirements that they needed for escorting the B-29s.
Well, it was also used from air to ground some toward the end of the war.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
I think everything was.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You just went out and shot up stuff.
That's right. Because as they ran out of airplanes, I think as they ran out of enemy airplanes to shoot, both in Europe and Japan, they transferred the deal over to be ground support airplanes for the troops.
Yeah, I can remember. I'm a retired airline guy, and I was over in Frankfurt one time, and I was talking to a guy, a German guy, and we asked him, and I said, well, did you suffer much during the war? He was old enough. Then. He says, no, there was some idiot that just kept coming over. We had a barge out there, and he said this P-47, and he said he just kept hitting that barge, and he said never did anything. He just destroyed the barge. Come to find out, it was one of our pilots that had done that when he was in the war.
Okay.
So I think they talking to some of the guys toward the end of the war, it was just find the target.